Hello, everyone. Well, it's been more than 3 months since I last published an episode. During that time, and a large reason for my longer than expected absence, is that I had two major inner ear surgeries. Unfortunately, these surgeries resulted in some complications, which left me in a state of severe vertigo and dizziness, and for weeks at a time, unable to leave my bed. This period also coincided with my leaving the Australian Army, which turned out to be more emotionally taxing than I anticipated. I will come back to that another time, once I'm ready to reflect more deeply on my 15 years of service. Needless to say, I have left the institution with many unanswered questions and lingering doubts about what I have been a part of since joining back in 2004. While this period has forced me to take time to focus on my own health and healing, I have watched in horror, like many of you, as the atrocities of war and conflict have continued relentlessly around the world. As disappointed as I've been with the actors involved, I've been just as disappointed by the limited and oversimplified coverage these events have received, often neglecting or outright refusing to look past outdated generalizations or to consider the broader context and ramifications of these events. Ultimately, my increasing frustration about the superficial narratives being pushed into the world is the reason that I knew I'd be back with you, to explore the many facets of war that largely remain unaddressed in our public discourse. According to the Geneva Academy, there are currently more than 110 active armed conflicts around the world. While most of these don't capture our headlines, others most certainly do, and none more so than Israel's war on Gaza. Yes, I use that phrasing intentionally, as I'm sure that what we're watching unfold in Gaza is something that will echo through history as a gross and systematic violation of basic human dignity and a grotesque misapplication of international humanitarian law by Israel. This is the same Israel that prides itself on upholding the protection of innocence as a key pillar of its plight against those who seek to deny its existence. Unfortunately, we are collectively so consumed by soundbite rhetoric and media-induced tunnel vision that we're not seeing the forest for the trees. While October 7th shook Israel and much of the world to its core, it in no way justifies the carnage imposed on Gaza. And just to be clear, do I agree that Hamas and affiliated armed groups have carried out grave and condemnable acts of terrorism? Absolutely. There is no dispute about that. But can I look beyond that day, as horrifying as it was, and try to understand how and why these atrocities might have occurred? Absolutely. And those two statements are not logically incompatible. The former acknowledges the acts of indescribable violence of October 7th, while the latter acknowledges that this act, grave and horrifying as it was, exists as one of the innumerable instances of pain and suffering in this century-plus-long saga. Relying on October 7th as the sole moral arbiter in this conflict, as many in our public domain are doing, is akin to reading just a single page of a 500-page novel and then believing to have grasped enough of the character's pain, joy, hopes, fears, and history to make a moral judgment on the entire work. Collectively, we need to stop, think, and act with a single purpose in mind: to reduce human suffering. That should be the preeminent goal right now. This is no longer about what Hamas has done or Israel's right to self-defense. This is about the deliverance of indescribable death and destruction by a nuclear-armed nation-state that seeks to legitimize its actions in the global public opinion arena through the worn and tired proclamation of existential threats and antisemitism. This no longer holds any water. Israel has gone too far, way too far. And to not stand up and say this because of fear of being accused as an anti-Semite is either simply cowardice, sponsorship of some hidden agenda, or the result of a successful influence campaign. There is no fourth option. As so eloquently summarized by the UN Special Rapporteur Francesca Albanese in her recent report, Anatomy of a Genocide, and I quote, "Over 30,000 Palestinians have been killed, including more than 13,000 children. Over 12,000 are presumed dead and 71,000 injured, many with life-changing mutilations. 70% of residential areas have been destroyed. 80% of the whole population has been forcibly displaced. Thousands of families have lost loved ones or have been wiped out. Many could not bury or mourn their relatives, forced instead to leave their bodies decomposing in homes, in the street, or under the rubble. Thousands have been detained and systematically subjected to inhuman and degrading treatment. The incalculable collective trauma will be experienced for generations to come. We also have the International Court of Justice decision, which found that Israel has engaged in acts that could plausibly constitute violations of the Genocide Convention. Yes, I know. Many will say that this court is biased and that it's merely a political tool, but it is the best we've got. More to the point, the decision was passed with an overwhelming majority of 15-2 and 16-1. Most notably, the American judge presiding over the deliberations voted in favor of all six provisional measures that Israel must comply with, including that it must take action to prevent genocidal violence by its armed forces, prevent and punish the incitement to genocide, and ensure that humanitarian aid to Gaza is increased. Let the irony of this ICJ decision not be lost on anyone. We are talking about Israel, a state created at the end of World War II for the protection of those subjected to the horrors of the Holocaust, now being subject to plausible claims that it's violating the Genocide Convention. The convention itself was in large part created to condemn and prevent genocides like the Holocaust. Then there is the United Nations Security Council Resolution 2728, which, ambiguous as it was, called for an immediate ceasefire until the end of Ramadan. We all know how abysmally this binding resolution failed, as there was no pause in fighting in Gaza. But what is truly monumental about this vote is not its unsurprising impact on the battlefield. Rather, it is the fact that the US, the single most ardent supporter and enabler of Israel, both politically as well as militarily, did not veto the resolution, but simply abstained, while the other 14 member states supported it. These are watershed moments in history. This is the world, including the United States, saying to Israel that nothing, not even the atrocities of October 7th, can justify what is credibly argued as a genocide against the Palestinian people. It is for this reason that it's important to look beyond today's headlines and to be guided by a simple commitment to reducing human suffering. And I will attempt to do my part by interviewing people who I believe can help shed light on geopolitical machinations behind these headlines. First up, I will be speaking with Chris Gunness, a former spokesman for UNRWA, who has a long-standing record of advocating for the voiceless Palestinian people. I will also be interviewing the United Nations Special Rapporteur, Francesca Albanese, about her report, as well as its reception around the global halls of power. In mid-April, I will interview Dr. John Thomas, a prominent military ethicist, about the dire state of our collective moral compass. Later in April, I will be speaking with General David Petraeus about his book, Conflict, the Evolution of Warfare from 1945 to Ukraine, where I'll aim to analyze current global conflicts through the lens General Petraeus presents in his book. Looking further afield, I'm also in conversations with Professor Norman Finkelstein, as well as with Moin Rabbani, about interviews later in May. For those who haven't seen these two debate the nuances of the Israel-Palestine conflict, I recommend you watch the heated debate hosted by Lex Fridman on his podcast between these two thinkers and two prominent defenders of Israel, including the esteemed Israeli historian, Benny Morris. Some will hear these names and will undoubtedly accuse me of being biased. Well, to be frank, if siding with humanity and the idea that reducing human suffering is a noble goal, then sure, I'm biased. If calling out hypocrisy and blatant lies we're forced to endure day in and day out is biased, then yep, count me in. As I said at the beginning of this monologue, I am sure that we are in a moment of history that will echo across generations. And the way I see it is, there are now two very simple sides to choose from. One, you either stand by in silence as war crimes on a scale rarely seen in modern history unfold, or you add your voice, however faint it may be, to a growing chorus of voices demanding a stop to this carnage. On this show, I'm opting for the latter.